welcome into Bonanza, our first show of 2023. Let us be one of the very last people to wish you a happy new year. I'm Nicholas Hodell. Nick Keneally is alongside me, and I'm hoping you had a very good new year.
Oh, yes, I did.
That is very, very good to hear. I'll tell you who is not having a good new year, the Purdue Boilermakers. Number one in the country goes down to Rutgers again. Second consecutive year this has happened now, Nick. And we were just talking a little bit right before we started this show. Purdue 19 of 28 from the free throw line. And again, the Boilermakers had 17 more free throws than Rutgers. That kind of feels like the stat of this entire game, Nick.
I mean, yeah, when you get those free opportunities, they're called free throws for a reason. You really have to knock those down, especially if you're looking to be one of those top teams in the country. And that's just not what they were able to do here. One of the key aspects of the game, you know, you have to take advantage of those opportunities. And down the stretch, they just couldn't do that. And that's what led to this loss right here. I mean, one of the, of course, things that led to the loss.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily on one guy, unless you want to blame Caleb First for 0 of 3 from the line. I mean, Zach Edey missed a couple. Fletcher Lawyer missed a couple. You know, different guys missed different free throws. Kind of a team collective more than anything in that department. I mean, you do have to give Rutgers all kinds of credit. They shot the ball better than Purdue at every single level of the floor, pretty much. Fantastic performance again from Rutgers. I mean, this is now, like I said, the second straight year they've done this. And for Rutgers now, 10-4 overall, 2-1 in conference play. It's a Rutgers team that certainly hasn't been too much on the radar, but they have maintained a position where they just keep improving analytically, already with a home win against Indiana, now on a road win against Purdue, which is going to be Rutgers' signature win. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Rutgers, they it feels like they're really finding themselves as a team, and for a team that they had a pretty tough start to December, only got one win out of it. If you don't want to include their home win against Wake Forest, which is still a decent win in its own right. Looks like Rutgers, it seems like they have that big win that can really catapult their momentum going into at least the rest of this month, Nick.
I mean, and this is a very, very solid team here. I mean, after that home win against Indiana, they went into Ohio State while they were ranked 25, and almost won. They lost by one. You can't give them credit for almost winning a game. But this is a solid team, and this win over Purdue just really solidified that team that they are. They're pretty efficient. They're good at getting the ball up. They're good at getting a lot of attempts up. And they can rebound decently well, especially against this Zach Edey led team. They were able to almost equalize the amount of rebounds. This is a very, very good Rutgers team. And they, you know, they have some solid matchups in the future, you know, next two games against Maryland and Iowa. I'm very interested in watching this team.
Yeah, certainly. It seems like Rutgers are getting themselves back on the national radar. And as for Purdue, I mean, pretty much the main pieces did what they needed to do for the most part. I mean, Zach Edey continues to be fantastic with 19 points, 10 rebounds in this particular game. By far the leading scorer on Purdue. Bigger picture, though, for Zach Edey, 6 of 10 from the floor, a little bit more usage in the shooting department than their last game against Florida A&M, but now failing to reach the 20-point mark in three of his last four games. He did not play against New Orleans on the 21st, and not getting to that 20-point mark consistently, that is a departure from an 8-game streak of 20-plus earlier on this season, so I wouldn't be too concerned there, but in the grand scheme of things, a little less scoring production from Edey really than normal. And I mean, this isn't a game I would be terribly concerned about, really, if you're a Purdue fan. I mean, assuming New Mexico, not the last undefeated team in the country. Credit for them to that. Guarantee that they're not going to end up undefeated come March. So I mean, you can afford a loss or two along the way, and certainly losing a conference game, you don't want to do it at home, but certainly it's not horrible in the grand scheme of things.
No, if I was on the Boilermaker squad, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Of course, you have to take a loss and take the lessons that come with that. But you know, with the usage for Edie, they could be just trying out different things, trying out different schemes, because this is kind of sort of the time that you can experiment before you get into March. They might just be throwing out different looks out there, and of course you hate to lose, as you said, a conference game at home. But the concern level is still very low. I think this is just a one-off loss. Of course, I don't think they're going to win out the rest of the season. They might drop a couple more, but to a team of Rutgers caliber, at least, I don't think that this is a concern going forward.
Yeah, you look bigger picture at the production and Edie with his 10 shots was the third most on the team from this game. Had a few other players with some more, but you know, what performance, you know, off the bench. You're looking at a guy like Trey Kaufman-Wren, 0 of 6 from the floor, 0 of 2 from 3. That certainly is an ideal a guard off the bench. David Jenkins Jr., the senior, 0 of 3 from the floor. All of those were threes. And a couple other guards. You look at Ethan Morton, he was just 1 of 2 from the floor. And you look at Braden Smith, one of the key freshman guards, 1 of 3 from the floor. So, you know, different guys got different opportunities to shoot the ball. Certainly interesting if you're a Purdue fan, just kind of looking at it and dissecting it a little bit. But grand scheme of things, it's one loss. That's not gonna really kill you now. You're going to be able to enjoy the whole week as number one, because probably won't happen. We'll see where that ends up going. But certainly for Purdue, not ideal, but you can get over it. I think that's the biggest picture there that we can give for Purdue, is that you can get over a loss like that pretty quickly and bounce back, especially with how well this Purdue team has played. I don't think this is going to be the start of a run of losses. Rather, it's going to be a blip in the radar. Purdue's going to be just fine throughout the rest of the month of January and really try and get themselves, just continue to pick up those Big Ten runs they need to continue their run at the Big Ten's top team. Let's move on a little bit. Of course, Purdue losing to Rutgers just happened within the last few minutes of us getting on the recording for this show. And what was going to be our top story was the Kentucky Wildcats. And you can't necessarily put away anything you did in the last calendar year too easily in this sport. And that's kind of the way Kentucky is feeling right now. This past Wednesday, an ugly road loss, 89-75 at Missouri. Pretty much the game that has put Missouri clearly on the national map now. And just to focus on this particular game, one of those games where I see Oscar Tshiebwe having double the number of free throw opportunities as he did 2-point field goals. I'm seeing guys like the freshman Kaysen Wallace with 16 shots. I'm seeing guys like Shavil Wheeler with 12 shots. And it's so interesting to me because I really feel like obviously the 17 free throws attempted means they are getting the ball to Tshiebwe. And he's really just drawing contact. That's what that means. But for a guy like Oscar Tshiebwe, and for a Kentucky team that has him, come on. Like, I want to see them really focus on Oscar Tshiebwe. Like, I shouldn't be seeing a single player on this basketball team having more field goals attempts than Oscar Tshiebwe. Granted, Tshiebwe got a lot of action from the free throw line. He had 17 of the team's 24 free throw attempts, which that's, think about that for a second. That's pretty wild. But I really feel like it's interesting. You know, it's just interesting to me here, Nick.
Yeah, just looking at it, on surface value, it's like he can't be your third most, volume shooter. He has to be the number one. You have a player off the bench. You have Antonio Reeves, who's almost taking as many field goals as him. And this, we are talking about the defending National Player of the Year here. We are talking about the Oscar Tshiebwe. Yes, he's getting the ball. Yes, he's getting to the free throw line, but he has to be able to take more field goals. Of course, some of those might be hand in hand, some of those might be and ones, but a lot of the time it's just him getting hacked. And I don't know if it's like a defensive, if it's on the scouting report, hey, send him to the free throw line rather than just letting him get these layups, because he can back down pretty much any interior defender in the country. But this is definitely something that the Wildcats need to focus on. How are we going to start getting better layup opportunities for Tshiebwe? Maybe it's not beating him the ball and having a back down. Maybe it's having him cut. Maybe it's having him just drop the ball off to him and he can put it up and in rather than letting the defense take time to get adjusted. Is it a coaching issue? Who knows?
Yeah, this is one of those interesting things where, yes, he scored 23 points, and yes, that's up there with his highest scoring single games that he's had this year. But you look at the grand scheme of things, I mean, Oscar Tshiebwe has had less than 10 points on three different occasions, one of them coming in a performance off the bench of just 14 minutes play. You can kind of excuse that. But the other two, eight against Bowerman, eight against UCLA. It's interesting to me. And you look at those games even further in what Kentucky was able to do. I mean, you had to rely on a freshman off the bench in the UCLA game, Chris Livingston, who was the leading scorer with 14 points, and JaVale Wheeler had 11 there. And in the game against Bowerman, while Kentucky did only allow 41 points in the game, it wasn't like that was the best offensive output either. It is just so interesting to see this kind of approach. And it's not to say that Tshiebwe still isn't the number one target. I still think that is the case. But it is just interesting to where on a team like this, I would think everything goes around Tshiebwe, right? You know,
I
you
mean,
try
you
to get, yeah, you get the ball to Tshiebwe anytime you can, maybe kick it out and allow some guys a 3-point opportunity. And I should give credit to Cason Wallace for a 5 of 13 performance from three in that department. I should give him some credit there. But it's just so interesting. A team like Kentucky shouldn't be going to a team like Missouri under a coach in his first year with the Tigers. Calipari's Wildcats should not be getting blown up by 14 points in this scenario.
It just can't happen. You look at other games like the UCLA game where you mentioned he had 8 points. He took 12 attempts, made four of them from the field. He played 39 of those minutes. He played 39 minutes in that game, and as the reigning, oh, critically acclaimed the best player in the nation, you have to be taking more than 12 attempts from the field if you want to be able to push your team to a win. I'm not understanding the disconnect here. It's mind-boggling. That's the only way I can put it. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting, because when they turn around and beat a truly awful Louisville team by 23 points at home, Tshiebwe had 24, also 14 rebounds. Jacob Toppin also had 24 with more field goal attempts than Oscar Tshiebwe, and Tshiebwe had 9 free throw attempts. So it's interesting where in that game, the production was almost Tshiebwe and Toppin together as a front court unit, which is certainly interesting. I mean, this Kentucky team at 9-4 with a quite a big game at home against LSU, an LSU team that is the first team in the others receiving votes category in the latest AP poll. And this is certainly an interesting game for Kentucky. I almost think a must win because you look at what they've done over the last month. I mean, since they beat Michigan on a neutral floor, and since they beat Yale at home, and that Michigan game, I should add, was overseas. So you have all kinds of weird things going on there, but they haven't beaten anyone quality. And the two teams they have played since that Yale game that have been quality opponents, UCLA, Missouri, it went awful. Just downright awful. I still believe this is a good basketball team. I mean, just you look at the talent of this team, it shouldn't be equating to what it is right now. And it's just hard to really put a finger on what exactly is wrong with this Kentucky team right now. And I really need to see Tuesday's game against LSU to really figure that out, Nick.
I'm struggling in the same way. I can't.
Yeah.
It's they have their answer right in front of them, but it seems like they're just not seeing it.
Yeah. That's certainly the case, and I don't know what ends up happening from here, but the Kentucky team, some of the performance that they put together, you look at some of these games in the next few weeks, the next couple of Saturdays, at Alabama, at Tennessee, we can't expect wins against either of those teams, just based off what they've done so far. And that's why I'm so curious to see how they do at home against LSU, a team that has proven they can beat a top team. So that's going to be an incredibly fascinating game. And quite frankly, I'm thinking must-win territory for Kentucky just to prove to people that, hey, we can still beat people that have beat people. You know, we can still do that and not fall victim to ourselves. So that is certainly a story that we're going to be watching play out all over the next several months. Let's move on to the Big East and the UConn Huskies, a major upset. And we talked about Purdue, their first loss. UConn picked up their first loss to close out 2022 on the road in Cincinnati against what is turning out to be an incredible Xavier team in a 10-point loss in a game that Xavier, they took full advantage down the stretch of the 12-2 run in the final minutes to win this ball game. And such an interesting game and Xavier team effort. Five guys with at least 10 points. Zach Freemantle with a double-double of 16 and 11. And you had another one with 16, Kobe Jones. Jack Nunji had 15. Jerome Hunter off the bench had 15. Just the ultimate epitome of a true team performance here, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, just top to bottom, everyone was really chipping in and doing their piece. Even bench players, like you look at Kai Tandy, who, you know, they get those minutes in so that they're there. Of course, he hit 1-3, but, you know, that was his only attempt. Desmond Cloud, he took one attempt, but he made it. You know, it's the players that they don't necessarily get the ball a lot, but when they got the ball, they put it in the basket. It's really everyone on Xavier was doing what they're supposed to, and that's just added on to all of their starters, plus Jerome Hunter, of course, having the double-digit performances.
Yeah, and the Xavier teams, really, they've done this. I mean, you look at their three losses, home against Indiana, where it was an incredible game. Neutral site games against Duke and Gonzaga in Portland. That's it. I mean, they've beaten West Virginia at home, Florida on a neutral floor for what that's worth. Now this home win against UConn. Certainly the Cintas Center is turning out to be an incredibly feared place to play, and it should be. I mean, what Xavier has done, bringing back Sean Miller, has been nothing short of incredible. I mean, this is a Xavier team that, you watch this club through the NIT last year, win the NIT, you figured something special was coming with this Xavier club. That's typically the trajectory of NIT champions. The next year, they're great. And Xavier has done just that. And it's the veterans. I mean, they have four guys that KenPom is calling significant contributors on the usage percentage. Four guys. And then you have another four guys that are in that role players category. Guys like Adam Kunkel, Jerome Hunter, who I mentioned with the big performance against UConn, Desmond Claudie, the freshman as well. They know how to really do this exceptionally well. And it's making Xavier, in my mind, that number two in the conference, as far as the team tiers, if not clearly number two. I mean, once Creighton kind of fell off a little bit, talks of, well, maybe Marquette might slide up in there, but Xavier, to me, has clearly gone into that category, particularly after this performance.
I mean, I'd have to hardly agree. I mean, with the way that they were able to, it wasn't just a narrow win against UConn. They were able to handle them by double digits. That really just, it set the gap between the teams, and it really, like you said, bumped them way up in the Big East. And of course, they have a tied conference schedule with Providence. They're both 4-0 as of right now. And Providence is, of course, going to, you know, set themselves apart as they do. But this is a very, very great Musketeer squad right here.
Yeah, this is going to be their signature win, just like Rutgers got their signature win at Purdue on Monday. And And for Xavier, I don't think you can question the clutchness of this team anymore. I mean, all you got to do is look at that 12-2 run in the final minutes to pretty much put that game away. I mean, that to me says that says everything I need to know for a team I had regarded for multiple weeks as my number one nationally. For Xavier to do that at home in the final minutes to put that Huskies team away, that is all I need to know about the kind of team that Xavier is. They're not afraid of anybody. And I think Xavier is going to be a team that we possibly talked about in the bracket preview show a few weeks before the NCAA tournament as a team that we're seeing up on that television screen. Certainly a team that can get there. They just need to continue to rattle off the wins. They have the quality wins. All their losses are quality. It's going to find a way to really have smooth sailing the rest of the way. And you look now at January 25th, the road game for Xavier at UConn, that becomes must-see television. Well, New Year's Eve saw games like that, and then New Year's Day saw games like the one Michigan was able to put together against Maryland. This was an absolute rout. It was an 81-46 performance. Michigan absolutely handling everything that Maryland tried to throw at them. Not a single Maryland player was in the double digits in scoring at the end of the night. And quite frankly, this performance is all thanks to Hunter Dickinson. 32 points, 13 of 16 from the field, no three-point attempts, 12 rebounds, a couple of blocks, a couple of assists, three turnovers, yes, but his incredible high usage and his incredible output really is all you have to know about this game.
I mean, yeah, you look at this Maryland team here, the way that none of them were really able to score. They got limited. Of course, they put a lot of shots up. They put 68 shots up as a team, but they only knocked down 26% of those. They were shooting the three a lot, but they weren't able to knock down a lot of those. Even their free throws, they didn't get a lot, but they weren't knocking them down. Michigan just completely handled them on the defensive side. And that turns over to easy offense. That's what was able to lead Hunter Dickinson into getting his 32 points. Great defense leads to great offense. And that's exactly what the Wolverines were able to take advantage of. Just finding their matchups, whatever it was that they were able to do here, it worked perfectly. Every single player on the Terrapins got locked up. Not a single one of them had a scoring performance where you look at their field goals, you look at the way they shot the ball, and you're like, oh, that's a positive that we can take out of this game. You know, this might have been a bad game for us, but here's a gem. No, zero bright spots for this offense. They got out-rebounded, outshot. They turned the ball over. It was just a bad, bad game.
Yeah, and Maryland, it's just there's just nothing you can really say to justify what Maryland put out there. And for Michigan, this becomes a result that is firmly on the positive side on a season that has been a complete and totally mixed bag of every single proportion. And this performance against Michigan came off the heels of an upset loss at home against Central Michigan. Central Michigan is 270th. And KenPom, they're not good. And so Michigan goes from losing to Central Michigan, a game where four guys had 10-plus points. Hunter Dickinson, 10 free throw attempts, only three shots inside the three-point arc, only one shot outside of it. It's just one of those situations to where I'm really – it's one of those things – who is Michigan? Are they the team that very balanced scoring finds a way to lose at home at Central Michigan? Or are they the team when they use Hunter Dickinson as much as they did, are able to blow Maryland out? You look at those two games and you look at the rest of the season. And I mean, it kind of follows this trend. I mean, the close win against Linscomb at home on the 17th, only winning by 10 at home at Jackson State. Ohio pushing you to overtime at home. Eastern Michigan pushing you in a neutral floor. And then you look at the Pittsburgh game, 31-point blowout. You look at what they were able to do at Minnesota. Not that Minnesota is any good, but you look at what they did there, exactly what they were expecting. Playing against teams like Virginia and Kentucky and North Carolina very well. Who exactly is this Michigan team? They've had results of every single variety up until this point where I can't figure it out.
It's confusing. They have yet to find their identity. It's you don't know what to expect going into each and every single game. And I think that the root of that is you have Hunter Dickinson, you have Jet Howard, but it's questioned throughout every single game. Who else is going to step up? Is it going to be Kobe Bufkin? You know, is it going to be Jalen Llewellyn? Who is going to step up? I think that's the soul of this inability to find out who they are. It's are players going to step up? Are you going to have five or six players that score double digits, or is it just going to be Hunter Dickinson carrying the load, or is it just going to be Jet Howard assisting him? It's they have yet to figure that one out.
Yeah, and you look at what Hunter Dickinson's done to this point in a game-by-game sense, you look at recent games, just recent games, because Hunter Dickinson performed very well in the loss to Kentucky and Virginia with 23 points in each game. Recent games. The Minnesota game had 19 points, decent usage. The Lincecum game, that close game that should not have been close, 15 points, only 9 shots from the field. The loss against North Carolina, just 9 points, 3 of 9 from the field. But Central Michigan loss, as we said, 13 points, just 9 shots from the field. And then you look at the game against Maryland, he's making nearly everything. Good performance in the line, 32 points. Is that not a more clear and convincing case for what the Michigan team should be?
It's right there. It should be pretty clear for them, but it's these ongoing questions.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like you need to become one-dimensional. I mean, you need to have guys like a Terrence Williams and a Kobe Buffett and Jet Howard helping out. Maybe pad their assist numbers a bit with some good dimes to Dickinson whenever you can. But you, Dickinson, and a Big Ten conference that is the epitome of the year of the big, you have one of the best picks of the entire conference. Utilize him. I mean, what they've gone through the last few weeks, to me, makes a case for Hunter Dickinson being the Big Ten's MVP. Not necessarily Player of the Year, because I do MVP and Player of the Year as two different things. Obviously, the MVP award has become synonymous with Player of the Year. Not the way I view it. Not the way I view it. And it shouldn't be in college basketball. Just when you look at Hunter Dickinson, what he's done, he absolutely is the clear, most valuable player. Because what Michigan does in these late games they've had as of late in the last few weeks, what they've done without a dominating performance of Dickinson has been rather sketchy. And so you have to just utilize Dickinson. I mean, they can't compete against anyone when he's putting in good performances. And that really is a lesson of the Virginia and Kentucky games. When he had 23 points in each game, had really good usage marks, had a fast number of the percentage of points for the team. But when things get shaky for this team, it is typically because of Hunter Dickinson not getting utilized in the way that he should be, typically. And I should point out, even at the Eastern Michigan game, it was Hunter Dickinson who got the team across the line in that game. I mean, there is no other thing I can say other than, and you've said this too, it's right in front of Michigan. Why don't they do it more often? And that they've done, Michigan at 8-5 now, they are having to play catch up from a resume standpoint at 8-5, especially with the loss against Central Michigan. And you're also banking on Arizona State being a really good team, and as much as we can say, it's kind of up in the air right now on Arizona State, just how good they can be. Good record, yes, but some bad losses. So Michigan, they need to just focus on the Big Ten schedule and focus on using Hunter Dickinson to every single extent they possibly can. I mean, they can put together a quality win total that competes with every single team in the country if they use Hunter Dickinson smartly, get the ball to him at all costs. The girls can take open shots if they want, but it should be Dickinson, 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 because not too many teams in the Big Ten can compete with a guy who is 7'1", 260, like Hunter Dickinson.
No, just the absolute impact that he has on this squad, the way that he's able, he opens up scoring, not only for himself, that's why you see these big numbers, but he opens up, open three opportunities for his teammates. That's why you have teammates Kobe Buffett, that's why you have teammates like Jet Howard that are able to get open looks. It all boils down to Dickinson's performances, to that impact you talk about, why he's the most valuable player in the country. He might not be the best, but the value that he has to Michigan is unmatched in any other system in the Big Ten, at least. Maybe you can argue in the country. The answer is right there for the Wolverines. Can they unlock his full true potential and just let it be his team? That's the question.
Yeah, and what really makes Michigan unique from other top teams in the Big Ten, particularly a team like Indiana, is that not only does Indiana have Trayce Jackson-Davis, they have guards like Jalen Hoops-Savino, and they have those other guards. I mean, Rhys Thompson, you know, you're going to really rely on Tamar Basic, you really get into form, but they have the talent in the backcourt that is... It's no Trayce Jackson-Davis, but they have that experience there. They have a Xavier Johnson. We'll see where he takes to the injury, just how long he's out. And guys like Miller Kopp as well. They have veteran leadership in the backcourt who can kind of understand that they need to get it to guys like Jackson-Davis when he's healthy. Michigan, on the other hand, talent is there. I mean, it can be of guys like Jet Howard and Kobe Bufkin, but it's all very young. A lot of those key backcourt contributors are young. And so the message really should be, get to Dickinson. Continue to have him be a go-to guy. Just trust me, that's going to be the key for Michigan if they're going to make any kind of significant noise, in my opinion. And we're going to move on from that and go back to New Year's Eve, bouncing back and forth between those major days, and discuss the Big 12, because it was utter madness in this Big 12 conference. You had the game against Kansas and Oklahoma State that was very, very nearly a major win for Oklahoma State. The Cowboys rode all kinds of momentum going into the second half, and then Kansas had a 17-2 run early on that half. Oklahoma State and Kansas there just made an utterly tight contest in which Oklahoma State was able to just barely come out on the losing end. And then you had Iowa State blowing out Baylor. And it was a blowout. It was a very impressive result for a 10-2 Iowa State team. A 77-62 result that gives Iowa State arguably its best win, with a couple of losses that are not bad. The neutral game against UConn and the road game against Iowa, their in-state rival. And then Kansas State finding a way in overtime to defeat West Virginia. And the current state of play in the Big 12 Conference is, as we're taping this, every single team in this conference is in the KenPom Top 45. The KenPom Top 45. And it seems like every single year I do this show, obviously this is your first year in the program, Nick, but it feels like every single time I talk about the Big 12 Conference like this, the standard continues to just get better and better and better. And now that everyone's in the KenPom Top 45, it seems utterly ridiculous to me.
It's ridiculous. Just looking at it top to bottom, it's hard to argue that any of these teams don't deserve to be in March. I mean, because as of right now, they all have positive over 500 overall records. And it's not like, oh, they're beating up on some fluky teams. All of them are solid. That's why they're ranked high, so high analytically, because they've all proven themselves so far into this season. It's wild to see a conference so consistently solid. We've seen conferences this year, like the Pac-12, that have been consistently iffy. You've been looking, top schools like Arizona losing to Utah in those conferences. The Big 12, what it's dumbfounding how great this conference is right now. I mean, because you look at how, Kansas won the championship last year. Year before that, it was Baylor. Year before that, Texas Tech was in the Final Four. You've had this brief, recent history of dominance, and now it's sort of all coming together where you have five current teams in the AP top 25. All of these teams in the top 45 for KenPom. Kansas is one of the best schools in the nation. Texas is one of the best schools in the nation. It's just this assortment of greatness, and it's really rare to see. And it's great to watch. It's great television.
Yeah, and really right now, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State would really come off to me as the two teams that are kind of in the exception with that regard of teams that would sort of be in March if it were just done right now. I mean, the state of play right now for the Big 12 is, to me, maybe Texas Tech will be on the outside looking in also. They just don't have a signature win at all. I mean, you're looking at 7 bids. I mean, that's just kind of the state of play we're looking at right now. And that is just so utterly impressive. And it's going to continue to be like this. I do think the number once again is 7 for the Big 12. And for a league that just continually gets 70% of their league in the NCAA tournament, it's just so impressive for this to happen year after year after year. For us to be saying analytically that top to bottom, there are no easy nights. And it continues to be the never-ending gauntlet, and it's gonna be one to where it's only gonna be the minute details that separates a team that wins this conference from a team that is at the bottom end of this conference and is barely hanging on to an NCAA tournament spot. And I mean, that's just kind of what we've come to expect now from the Big 12 conference. I mean, this is not anything new with the Big 12. I mean, they've solidified their spot as a top conference for so many years now. I mean, number one in KenPom for 7 of the last 9 years. I mean, it's not an it's you have to expect this every single year. And we look at a year like last year. I mean, you had a couple of teams, West Virginia and Kansas State, that just couldn't keep up. I mean, but even then, every team was in the KenPom top 70 to close out the year. I mean, really, the only exception to the top to bottom brilliance was 2 years ago, where TCU, Kansas State, and Iowa State just were not good basketball teams. But they've both taken clear steps to make themselves better since that time. You look at the Wildcats of Kansas State at 12-1, that win against West Virginia. Iowa State 10-2, the win against Baylor. There's a reason why I've said for years that this is the never-ending gauntlet, because it doesn't stop. It just never stops. And when the gauntlet stops, clearly something's gone wrong, like it did 2 years ago. And it's just something that it's simply unbelievable, really, for us to be saying. Now, I've kind of mentioned Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, maybe Texas Tech with their weak non-conference schedule, no signature non-conference win, as teams that probably will get left out of the NCAA tournament. Just due to getting eaten alive, potentially. Is that kind of thinking what you're thinking too? Who are some teams you think is just gonna get eaten alive by this gauntlet and will be forced to miss out in the postseason because of it?
Yeah, I think those teams that you mentioned, I think specifically Oklahoma is gonna perhaps catch the worst, I'd say, of this beating from this conference. I mean, West Virginia is already down 0-2 so far. So it really, but that's still a solid team. It's so many questions there. I think the only one in my mind that's solidified to not probably have the greatest projection is Oklahoma. Because I could even see Oklahoma State, maybe if they squeeze out some great wins against those higher teams. I think that they might be able to squeak in, but if it of course, it's probably only gonna be 7 or 8 bids here, 7 realistically. But yeah, especially looking at Oklahoma and Texas Tech to be on the bottom two.
Yeah, I know a team like Iowa State, they have really good wins now on their schedule, but I look where they are analytically, offensively, 112th nationally, last place in the Big 12, in a league with all top 50 defenses to this point in the adjusted defensive efficiency. I'm very curious as to how the weakest offense analytically in the Big 12 holds up. I'm very curious to see just how the Cyclones hold up. TC to an extent even has that problem too, with their offense. And Oklahoma State is kind of down there, Kansas State as well. I'm just very curious to see how some of these weaker offenses hold up. I mean, give this a month and we might see the theme of the better offenses against the better defenses are rising to the cream of the crop. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see, for me at least, just how some of these weaker perceived offenses by the numbers, analytically, kind of fair in this Big 12 conference. And just to kind of give you another theme for listeners at home, the KenPom conference record projections, not necessarily something I pay a ton of attention to, but KenPom has Kansas and Texas projected at the top at 12-6, two more teams at 9-9, and everybody else at 8-10. I mean, this is, it's utterly absurd. I mean, I've never seen that. I mean, I can tell you that with pure certainty, but I've never seen KenPom's conference record projections that wide open. I mean, it literally is anybody's conference. The bids from the conference are literally anybody's to grab. I mean, there might just end up being pure chaos in this Big 12. And it's going to take a truly elite team to rise to the cream of the crop. Clearly, Kansas and Texas are already there. I think TCU, they've worked for the last several months since their ugly loss back in the start of the year, a home loss to Northwestern State. They've been working to get back up there, and they're clearly doing it. It's just going to be so fascinating to see just how that conference plays out on the road to March. One of the last talking points I wanted to have as we enter the new year of 2023, certainly several days into it already, I wanted to have a back and forth on who we think the teams have the most to prove in the 2023 calendar year. And I got it going so many different ways with this. And one of my first teams that I'm going to bring up is Penn State. It's a team that I've been high on, a team that has been pretty close to getting into my personal top 25. Clearly, no one else agrees with me in the AP poll to this point. But you look at what they've done, they have a couple of decent conference wins against Illinois and Iowa. But I mean, if you kind of stutter the rest of the way, that's not going to do you any good. They're going to pick up some more of those good wins. But I want to see, particularly this week, at Michigan, Purdue, and the Palastra, I want to see them play a high-level basketball over the course of this week, next Wednesday, the 11th, against Indiana at home, and just continue to ride it out throughout the rest of the Big Ten year. I certainly think that Penn State's a great team, led by seniors Jalen Pickett and Seth Lundy. I think Penn State has the potential to be talked about as a great team. They're just not there yet, in my opinion. And for an 11-3 ball club in the Big Ten, with those games and their best non-conference win coming at home against Butler, they certainly have so much to prove to me in the Big Ten schedule.
I mean, yeah, this is a team that's, let up a loss to Clemson where they let Clemson score 101 points. They've lost to a Michigan State squad. They lost to a Virginia Tech squad, but they've had some great wins. They beat Illinois while they were in their red hot streak. They've had that win against Butler, and they just beat Iowa, which actually transitions pretty well into my first team that I want to talk about here, which is Iowa. I talk about them quite a bit. I do really enjoy their squad a lot. I think Chris Murray is a great leader for this squad, and they have some great other other players, but they've really just been sort of up and down recently. They have solid wins over Iowa State. But you know, just you look at their losses, lost to TCU, lost to Duke, lost to a Wisconsin team, and then it just really starts trending down as of recent. Lost to Eastern Illinois, lost to Nebraska, lost to Penn State. I still have the faith that this Iowa team can turn it around. I mean, they're currently placed last in the Big Ten, but there's so much basketball to be played. I mean, they have games against Indiana next. Then they have Rutgers, Michigan. If they can go on a little stretch here, I still think they have so much to prove to this country. I mean, they were ranked a couple weeks ago. They squeaked into the bottom of the top 25. And I don't think they can make it back there, but I think they can start to rally back into the NCAA tournament discussions if they can have a good Big Ten, if they can start to round it out here. As of right now, of course, I don't think they're not making March. But a lot to prove, but this is one of the best schedules that you can have. You have so many big games where you can prove yourselves. And I have the faith in them that they can win at least a couple of those larger ones and put their name back up there.
Yeah, and they're a team that doesn't have a winning percentage according to KenPom of 70% or better until February 12th. So they currently have so many of those games that they can really pick up quality wins and try to really get back on track on that picture of being great. For me, my next team's going to be Creighton. You look at, I mean, they had so much promise going into the year, but now with Ryan Kalkbrenner, they're still 8-6. There's no getting around that. But you also see neutral site wins in Maui against Texas Tech and Arkansas, and what they're able to do against the bottom of the Big East. They're doing something right now with Ryan Kalkbrenner. And I had said after seeing Frederick Kang play in his place in person in Vegas, I thought to myself, clearly he's learned some things and he got some more production in that center position. You know, why are they still struggling here? And maybe it is Ryan Kalkbrenner, you know? Maybe he is like the Big East's version of that MVP as Tanner Dickinson is in the Big Ten. Now let's see them do it against some good teams. Against teams like Seton Hall at home. At UConn this Saturday, that's a major one for Creighton. At Xavier next Wednesday, the 11th, that's a major one for them. And then home against Providence on the 14th. You're looking at a solid four-game slate there. This ain't Butler or DePaul. This ain't Georgetown. These are four solid teams. And if they didn't get through that 4-0, if they didn't get back to 12-6, certainly you got to start talking Creighton again at that national level. Maybe not top 25, but at that national level of let's continue to see this progress from Creighton and shine the national light back on them.
I mean, it was crazy to see how fast they started off the season, their fall off they had with their seven game losing streak. It would be interesting to see if they could kind of turn it back around because they of course have that talent. Another team I'm going to mention out here, Oklahoma State of the Big 12. Of course, we mentioned in that Big 12 discussion of which teams are going to get the buys or get the bids, sorry. And you mentioned how you think Oklahoma State is one of the few teams that aren't going to make it in. I think Oklahoma State has the potential to kind of scrape into that bottom. But they have an upwards ways to go. They're currently 9-5. They're near the middle of the Big 12. But I like their prospects here. I mean, last two games, they beat West Virginia. They lost by two to Kansas. I mean, that Kansas squad, you know, one of the best teams in the country here. And Oklahoma State was this close to having a win in Kansas. You know how hard it is to go into Kansas and have a tough battle there, and they almost had it. I mean, they have solid scores over the top. No one really jumps at you and for a national level score, but Bryce Thompson, Avery Anderson, they're double digit scorers every night. John Michael Wright, he's a top scorer every night. you have some great players that go off for certain performances. And it's rounded off by some by decent shooting. I mean, they're a pretty well-rounded squad here. And going into their Big 12 schedule, it's the cream of the crop. It's the best conference in basketball right now. And, you know, they have those opportunities to prove themselves against these top teams. If they can get one or two wins against an AP top 25 team, I think that I could absolutely see them making it into March. It'll take that grit, but I feel like this Cowboys team has it.
Yeah, finishing off some of those wins, those games, and turning them into wins will be very crucial, because when we start looking at resume sheets and team comparisons later on the road to March, Nick, I can tell you this. It doesn't matter how you do it. Typically, it matters how you win or lose it. And for Oklahoma State, you can get so close to beating Kansas on the road, but it doesn't matter. You lost the game, and that's specifically the way those resume sheets usually end up working out. My next team is Arizona State. Now, at 11-3, there are a lot of people that still think ASU is out of the field right now. And that's because of the road losses at San Francisco and at Texas Southern. And with the non-conference top three wins that go like this, Creighton, Michigan, VCU, granted all on a neutral floor, that's not the best. And you have to really make up for it, especially when you take two bad road losses. So now through Pac-12 play, you have a team that, as a program, I've seen this movie before. Non-conference goes great, work your way into the rankings, fall off, and the Pac-12 season becomes just below average or bad compared to what you did. I've seen this movie before, and I think this team can be different. But the thing for me is they need to prove that they are not a shoot-happy team. And, I mean, I've seen this before, this kind of guard-you attitude. And against Arizona, this went about as awfully as you can imagine. DJ Horn, 1 of 5 from 3. Desmond Cambridge, 1 of 7 from 3. Devin Cambridge, 0 of 4 from 3. Frankie Collins is 0 of 3 from 3. Alonzo Gaffney was 1 of 5 from 3. In my opinion, why is he shooting three-pointers to begin with? And this guard you mentality, it's great, but the thing that just gets to me is they're not that good of a shooting team. I'm sorry, they're not. Their three-point shooting is out of the top 300 naturally as we speak right now, 3.5%. They're just not that great of a three-point shooting team. They're not. What they need to do is get guys like Warren Washington active. And trust me, I've not been the only one saying this. You borrow Chris Cartman, Sun Devil Source, he's been saying this all year. Get the ball to Warren Washington. There's no reason why a guy who's at 7 foot 225 with what he has done in some games, there is absolutely no reason why he has had only one game of double-digit scoring outputs in the month of December. There's no reason for it. Yes, this backcourt's incredibly gifted, but what they need to learn, in my opinion, is when the ball is not going through the hoop on three-point shots, shift, get the ball inside of guys like Warren Washington. Even the Cambridge ties, he gets some good athleticism inside. Get the ball to them. Do work inside. Because bad shooting, if this continues, I guarantee it, there are going to be losses that this team takes that they didn't have to take because of poor shooting. It's going to happen again. It's not a one-off with this team. And it's going to be incredibly frustrated. And it's really going to be frustrating to see a team of so much promise if they continue on this fall on living and dying by the three. It's going to be incredibly frustrating to see them have to sweat it out on the bubble or worse, not get in. Show me that you can use Washington better when the threes aren't falling. That's what they need to prove to me.
I mean, you talk about living and dying by the three, and an example of that was that this recent home loss on New Year's to Arizona. They shot very poorly in that game because they kept leaning towards that outside shot. Yes, you talk about the guard. You think that, you know, Bobby Hurley really cemented, and you know, it's been great for recruiting. They've gotten great guards in like Josh Christopher over the last couple of years, you know, DJ Horn, Frankie Collins, but you have great options when you go inside. You know, you have Warren Washington, Devin Cambridge is great at getting to the basket. Even your guards, even Frankie Collins is really good at climbing that ladder. Can you get that balance where you're starting to go in, you cement that inside, and then you work out? It seems like they're trying to get the 3-point established first and then start going in. But when the 3-point shot isn't falling, then that completely ruins your game plan. I think that they have to start cementing cutting to the basket, those backdoor cuts, those dribble drives, because they have players like DJ Horn, Frankie Collins. They are really great at dribble drives. They can get to the basket with ease. They are both finesseable players. They have those on-ball abilities. So if you value that higher, I think that's really your issue. I think it's a leaning towards efficiency in this analytical era. I think that's what they're really trying to do.
And
For my third team,
to add on to that point real quick before I let you go on, Frankie Collins was 6 of 9 from inside the 3-point arc. I mean,
great score.
yeah, I mean, and Arizona had their struggles from 3-2. I mean, 5 of 22 for the Wildcats. They had their struggles too. Arizona was incredibly efficient from the free throw line, which I have to tip my cap for. But it's one of those things to where they can't get in a shooting battle because they're gonna lose it. I mean, just look at the San Francisco game. I mean, that is what can happen if this thing goes just terribly south to me. And I mean, and it's like we've and Arizona State fans, I know they've seen it before of teams that do good in non-conference and they go downhill. They've seen it before. I've seen it before. What's different about this team and how can they prevent that? I think it'll be the big key and a weaker than normal. Well, Pac-12s have been weak for years now compared to the other power conferences, but it's just so fascinating to where I'm wondering how they're going to work around this. Oh, we'll do one more team for each before we wrap this up, Nick.
Yeah, and you look at this Pac-12, and you know, you have your cemented Arizona that is going to be a bid. You have your UCLA likely to make it. And then ASU is kind of on the bubble, as you mentioned. I think another team really here that's on the bubble is Utah, of course. They had a great win. They've had their signature win already, against Arizona earlier on in the season, where they beat them by 15. But since then, it's been sort of rocky. I mean, you have a loss to BYU. You have your loss to TCU because, of course, they got their traction going. And now here they are in conference. So far, they're 2-0, but they've played Cal and Stanford. I mean, Cal, one of the least winningest, the losingest teams in the nation. I mean, Utah has this sort of potential to be this fourth bid in for the Pac-12 if the Pac-12 gets four bids, it's looking like right now. But they need to get wins, top wins against teams like Arizona State. They need to, of course, probably sweep Oregon. They need to have a solid game against UCLA. They have their win against Arizona. They're very close. They have that signature conference win already going into conference schedule. I think if they can just maybe put their foot more on the gas and not have those sort of bad losses that you can't take, they have a certainly clear-ish shot towards making it into March, is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that they know what they need to do. They need to get those solid wins. It's can they do it? They've been questionable when it matters. I mean, in that game against TCU, they lose by 4 at home. They have great scoring performances from Gabe Madsen. They have great scoring performances from Marco Anthony. But beyond there, the whole team just seems kind of almost like not lackluster, because they can still put the ball in the basket, but it comes up short on the defensive end and on the offensive end. And that's something they need to certainly tighten up.
Yeah, certainly. And my last team is going to be Florida Atlantic. It's a team that's 12-1. They have a quality road win against Florida. And on the national scale, it seems like hardly anyone is talking about Florida Atlantic. And for mid-major teams like this, they can learn a little bit from what Charleston did. The way you get the national attention at a mid-major conference is to keep winning. win some more. And they already got one really good Conference USA win at North Texas this past Thursday. They got another opportunity at home against UAB. How are they going to take advantage of that opportunity? I mean, this team is 35th in KenPom as we speak. And it seems that the national conversation on FAU is very silent. And under head coach Dusty May, they've got to figure out how they're going to break into that national picture. This is a team we've been talking a lot all year on. They get their best year in program history. And they are clearly on that path. But now the next step is thrust yourself into the national picture. And you can certainly do that by continuing to win. I mean, a home win against UAB will do wonders. Because UAB has been talked about throughout the course of this year a decent bit on the national scale. They're just outside the KenPom top 50, as is North Texas. So, and we've seen this before where at the mid-major level, all it takes is 2, 3, 4 conference losses and you're done. You're into the land of having to win the conference tournament. You don't get much room for error anymore at a mid-major conference. So for FAU, they got to really figure that out, how to deal with that pressure, because if they continue to win, as I suspect they will, they're going to deal with that pressure more and more and more. How do you deal with that pressure, and how do you continue to build on what is already a 11-game winning streak? That's what I'm going to be paying very close attention to in Conference USA. And that's going to wrap up our show, the first of 2023. We're going to be back in that Blaze Radio Studios pretty darn soon, within a couple of weeks, I'm hoping. And we'll be back in our Sunday regimen next week and into the rest of the road to March. For Nick Keneally, I'm Nicholas Hodel, wishing you a very good week. And we'll see you right back here on the next edition of the Bonanza.